Thanks for calling.
Hey, I just heard your last tune. That's one of mine.
Yes, yeah. Sir. Yes, sir. We've got a lot of that coming for the rest of the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Doing real well.
We're flattered, actually.
James, say hello to my partner, Mike, across the way from me here.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hi, James. I am... this is just... Yeah, I'm on cloud nine. you don't know. I just... this...
Let me tell you what you don't know, James. Mike has been calling me just... he's been calling me about every day this past week, sometimes twice and three times a day, to tell me things that I need to know about James Williamson. And it's good that you called, because I thought I might have to sedate him.
And I've been clean for coming on 8 years now, so we weren't going to do that.
So, how are things? You got the guitar out of the closet. Is it in good shape? Is it in good repair?
Absolutely. I dusted it off and had it restored, and it's back better than ever.
Yeah. Good deal. Glad to hear that. You played second guitar on the legendary 1973 album Raw Power with Iggy. I got to ask you, where was that record? Where was that recorded?
Well, before I go with that, let me make one correction. I didn't play second guitar. I played the only guitar.
Oh, pardon me.
Only guitar.
Pardon me. You know, I probably should have taken all of Mike's calls last week. Apparently.
Because basically what it was, Chris, if I can answer his question, I believe Mr. Ashton played bass.
That's right. Yeah, we moved Ron over to bass when we reformed the band. And prior to that, I had played guitar with Ron in kind of the late 72. And then in 73, he moved over to bass, and I was playing the only guitars.
Okay, I think I got it straight now. But you co-wrote all those songs.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so it was you and Ig bumping heads on those tunes. And Gimme Danger is just, that is the punk song as far as I'm concerned. That's did it for me. Where did that come from?
Where does anybody's music come from? I wrote almost every one of those songs in my room on an acoustic guitar in London. And we had gone over to reform the Stooges, make an album for CBS, and we tried a bunch of stuff, and there's lots of things out there that have been released from the sessions that we did, but we didn't eventually do any of those things. We came up with new material, and that was just one of them. But that's one of my favorites too.
Yeah, that about says it all. I gotta believe.
Basically, I'm sitting here with a picture, though. I happened to run out because I needed more information, the crazy man that I am, knowing that we were going to be doing this interview. And I know it's not an autobiography, but Open Up and Bleed. And I've got a picture here of you and Mr. Ashton on either end. And then it'd be
to 1971.
Jimmy Rica playing bass.
So,
yeah, you two on stage together playing guitar. So what was that like, though? I mean, that's back when you guys had already, dropped, well, Elektra had dropped you, and there's a picture from April of 1971 here with you on stage. You guys look like a pretty neat little fighting firm there in that picture.
Well, it was very brief, and so it's a little bit difficult to recall everything. But there was a period there when that picture was taken that the band was kind of in a what we thought was a sort of renaissance, but it didn't turn out to be that. But anyway, I think there's a couple of things that have surfaced recently. There's a new release from a company called Easy Action that that has some of those tunes that were recorded and by people out in the audience, and it sounded damn good. I can't remember any of those songs distinctly, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, all those guys were fun to work with.
Yeah.
Well, what I found amazing was that Rhino Records got a hold of all the outtakes from Funhouse, and they put it on a 7-disc set for those real diehard Stooge fans. There's 7 CDs of just outtakes of just Funhouse. I mean, Wrong Starts and this and that and the whole 9 yards. I was just kind of rooting around, and I found that, and you could keep on buying through the whole lot of what you gentlemen and, you know, the Ashton Brothers put together. I mean, it's amazing, some of this music. And I don't know, when I first heard or even saw the Stooges, I'm quite a bit younger, so... But the first time I ever got to see Iggy was Tattoo U Tour at the Pontiac Silver Dome, and Iggy was backing up the Rolling Stones, and I think it was Santana too, and I was just mesmerized. I was a young lad, but high school age, and I was just taken aback, and ever since then I've been a big, just an Iggy fan and a Stooges fan, and this is just a really neat time to interview. But also, too, the question I wanted to ask, which goes from one realm to the other, how do you go from being a Stooge to, like, vice president of... Technology standards of Sony.
Well, it takes a little bit of doing. I don't know that you have long enough in this program to go through everything, but just to sort of summarize things, at one point in about 74 or so, we had, and maybe you've heard the album Metallic KO and so yep. forth, where, you know, with all the bottles breaking and so forth, and you know, the band had kind of reached its limit, and nobody in the band really wanted to go on, and so the band dissolved, and I needed to figure out what I was going to do when I grew up, and so I started working at a recording studio, in the process of doing that, I got very interested in electronics. And so both the interest in electronics as well as the emergence of the personal computer, which was happening right about that same time, was very, very exciting to me. It was actually more exciting than rock and roll. And so I ended up becoming an electronic engineer and moving to the Silicon Valley, and had a really good run for about 27 years here, and enjoyed it immensely. I have no regrets in doing that. But by the same token, I had sort of left the music behind, and you know, in the last few years, I had sort of rediscovered the music in me, and so that was by doing that, I was able to thaw out a part of me that I had been missing for a long, long time, and so one thing led to another, and here I am again. But it's been quite an interesting thing. I can't say that the music business is terribly interesting for me, because it's not. But I will say that I do love the music, and I feel that the music is very fragile, and so it's important to sort of nurture the music and not get too carried away with all the business of music, because that can kind of destroy the music itself.
Amen. I hear you. That's a good take on it. So you've hooked up with a band called Careless Hearts.
Right, yeah. The Careless Hearts are a band here near where I live, and I ran into the guitar player, whose name is Derek C., at a very, very good local music store, where I went in to buy a Martin guitar, a certain kind of Martin guitar, and they didn't have it in stock, and so I told him to give me a call when if something came in, and he took my name and phone number, and he's kind of a student of the industry, and so he recognized it right away and started asking me questions about it, and sure enough, the next thing you know, he also writes for a very good guitar magazine called Fretboard Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, I'm doing an interview for him. And anyway, we got to be kind of friends. He's quite a bit younger than me, but we had developed a rapport. And eventually, when I got asked to come back and play with the Stooges, then he offered to lend his band to me to practice or to rehearse, because and they're the Carol's Hearts, and I haven't played live music in 35 years or so, and so playing with a band is not something I'm used to doing. So the offer was a terrific one, and I took him up on it, but sort of to repay him for that, I offered to sit in on a Carol's Hearts gig, and that turned into being, I guess we're calling them the Careless Stooges. We're doing a bunch of Stooges songs coming up here in September.
But the Careless Hearts also have an album out called Heart's Delight, and I just thought I'd give them a pump there too.
Absolutely.
On the Heart's Delight. Excellent
they're
album.
Good players. I mean, they're a band unto themselves. They're completely different style, but growing up, those guys, as did many other guys, played a lot of Stooges songs and so forth. So they're very familiar with it, and they're doing a terrific job in playing those things with me.
So coming up on September 5th in San Jose is going to be your first gig with Careless Hearts, your first gig in 35 years. How are you feeling about that?
What's that?
How are you feeling about that, first gig in 35 years?
Oh, really good. It's so much fun. We're sounding good, and I think, people, there's a lot of, pent-up demand for this sort of thing, so it's so odd to me that young people are so into this. An old guy like me coming out and playing, that's exciting to a bunch of young people. But by the same token, when I look at it, there's not a lot of rock and roll out there anymore. And so people who like to hear rock and roll, they don't care who plays it.
True enough.
I care who plays it. I want to hear you play it.
Yeah.
I'm sincere, because the sound that the Raw Power had, that James Williamson guitar is
yeah. Why all the aggression, James? What's up with that?
Style. I can't really tell you very well, because it's my natural way, but I think that the guitar was always an emotional outlet for me, and so no matter what kind of mood I was in, I would usually go up and play my guitar, and so some of it was one way and some of it was another, but I always tended to play my own songs, because it was a whole lot easier than learning somebody else's songs. And, that's the style that developed. And, I still play exactly the same way today. And it's not very transportable. It kind of has to be in the Stooges or somebody playing Stooges songs. But it works for me.
The question I wanted to ask, though, too, was, it seemed like Iggy fed off your guitar music and Mr. Ashton's guitar music. I mean, he became, and I've, in a lot of the reading that I've done, is there a difference between James Osterberg and Iggy Pop? I mean, they talk like he's two separate entities, and when he hits that stage, he becomes Iggy. It's kind of like the Superman thing, the way I read about it, and it seems like he was driven by either one of you two playing guitar, or whoever at the time. But really, as far as Stooges music, he really just went out there and almost, sacrificed himself to the music.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to explain Jim or Iggy, but I will say that he certainly could relate to. I'm sure Ron's music, and I know my music, and still can. I mean, we write songs together very well. We're doing some new material now, and it's just like we never, you know, it's just like yesterday that we did the last thing. So, you know, we just picked up where we left off, and, you know, people, there are certain people that can just move other people to do good things. And I think those are the relationships you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I agree. James, there was a show where Iggy was knocked out by a biker. Where did that happen?
It was a little club in Michigan outside of Detroit called the Rock and Roll Farm. And at the time, we had a manager out of New York that was booking all of our gigs. And, you know, his approach was to, and, you know, it makes practical sense. His approach was to book as many gigs around the larger gigs as possible so that we could, you know, maximize the amount of money that we were bringing in, you know, in any given area.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he didn't do a lot of research, and so he ended up booking us into this place called the Rock and Roll Farm that was a biker bar. And essentially what happened was a small biker bar, and we go in there and do our act. And, you know, Iggy is very confrontational, gets out into the audience and, you know, is right in your face. The problem was that he ran into the wrong guy, and, you know, the guy basically cold-cocked him. And that sort of, I think that really was a big turning point in that band, because prior to that, no one had ever violated our space. You know, it had always been the other way around.
Yeah.
And so that was a sort of reality check for us.
So since it was kind of a turning place in the band, what was your feeling right then? I mean, were you ready to just pack it at that point?
No, I was trying to get out of there alive.
you know,
it was pretty serious, actually, because it wasn't just him. You know, there was a whole bunch of them, and so anyway, and my girlfriend was there at the time, and you know, everybody was sort of worried about what was going to happen, and we didn't end up getting paid because we had to, you know, we had to stop our set and stuff. And
oh, man.
And then the next night, you know, that was followed up at the Michigan Palace with the infamous Metallic KO performance.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys were just known for getting, for a better term, less better term, shit just flung at you. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm reading this open up and let it bleed, and there's lots of spots in here where, you know, I'm reading about, you know, the hail of lit cigarettes, eggs, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you
bottles,
name it. Yeah,
cameras.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that was just a ritual just in Detroit,
Actually, the only time I recall that was during that Metallic KO performance. We were getting bottles and cameras and you name it was getting thrown onto the stage. So that was a whole nother matter. Normally, we didn't have that too much. I mean, we had a lot of, you know, there. It was always an event. But I think later, once Metallic KO came out, it started to become a kind of a cool thing to do, you know, and fortunately I wasn't in the band anymore, so I didn't have to endure that. But I was just down in L.A. talking to my old buddy Scott Thurston, and he was telling me, yeah, when they did a European tour, you know, people would just spit at them and, you know, throw shit at them, you know, it was unbelievable. I didn't have to do any of that.
Well, why no interview for the Legs McNeil book, Please Kill Me? Why were you left out of that?
You know, I don't have any idea. I I personally feel that that was a very, very poorly researched book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was extremely one-sided. One of the guys that he really interviewed heavily on me actually hated me. And so it was since there was no, you know, there was no sort of balance in the book, I came off, you know, sort of in a way that probably isn't very accurate. But anyway, it is what it is, and I guess he sold a lot of books.
I guess so. So September 22nd of 2008, the Stooges are nominated for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What's up with those people? Are they not listening? Are they not looking? Why aren't you in there? What's going on with that? Do you know?
Good question. I think we're either on number 7 or number 8 time now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's been a while. You know, I can only speculate. We hope this will be a different year. And, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, I think, went 7 years without getting in and finally did. Not that there's any comparison, you know, per se, but I think that the other problem with the Stooges is that we never really played the game, and that alienated a lot of record executives.
Thank you for sticking to your guns.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
Thank you for sticking to your guns.
Well, sure, but so were they.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, those are the guys that actually hold the keys to the whole event. I mean, yeah. If you look at it, you know, Sire Records is one of the key, you know, influences on that event. And yeah. If you look at how many people that were on Sire Records that are in there, it's pretty astonishing. You know, Seymour Stein, you know, kind of runs that show. So, anyway, maybe he'll come around. I don't know. There's always next year.
Hey, you know, we're only about 5 hours away from Cleveland. You want us to drive over there, talk to him, straighten him out? No, I'm kidding.
If it would do any good, sure.
Hey, I know that just this year, I believe it was this year, you performed with Mike Watt, and I think that's when talk of a Stooges reunion started. Is that right?
No, not actually. What happened was, you know, Ron Ashton passed away.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's a very sad thing, and we're all, you know, shocked, really, that he had to pass at such an early age. But anyway, he did, and coincidentally, around March of this year, I ended up taking early retirement from Sony, which is where I was working, and so, you know, one thing led to another, and you know, the Stooges really can't go on as the Stooges without any Stooges, right? I mean, there would be, if it's Iggy and the Stooges, there would be Iggy and the Stooge with Scott being the only Stooge there. And so I kind of, you know, I go back with those guys a long, long time, and, you know, I could do it. So I said, you know, okay, I'll do it. And so that's how I got started. And then Iggy did a benefit down in L.A., with the Chili Peppers, and I went down and talked to him, and you know, we figured stuff out, and so we're going to do it.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Next year, the Stooges are going to be playing live in a city near you. That's exciting.
Well, that part I can't say about.
can't say for sure.
I mean, we're going to do some gigs. Where they are, I have no idea at this point. Nobody does. But somewhere next year, we're definitely going to be playing.
Well, lifers, you'll hear about it here first. That's for sure.
James, and you talked about that man that wrote that other book. And right now, like I said, I'm reading Open Up and Bleed. Did you get put any information into this book at all? Were you ever asked?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's Paul Trinka's book.
Right.
In my opinion, and many other people's opinion, that is the most thoroughly, best researched book of any book on the band ever.
Now,
and, that book is 99, you know, point something percent accurate and true, which you can't say for any of the other ones.
It's
darn close to the pure truth.
It is a well-researched book for me, just where I'm into it. There was a lady, a lady that was ahead of your fan club back in the day. And, you know, in reading this, it pretty much sounded like when you guys were on the road, it was like debauchery, Caligula, more or less. And she kind of, somewhere in there in the book, she kind of blames you, and I don't understand why. I mean, even in reading it, it doesn't really explain why she kind of blames you for some of the stuff that went on.
Well, I think you're referring to Natalie Stoodling. And she was a person, you know, back in the day of the early Stooges, and so she was very close to Ron and to, you know, to the other guys. And here I come, you know, kind of this new person, and you know, I can't claim to be any kind of angel, but I think I'm kind of also a little bit of a lightning rod sometimes for this sort of thing.
Know the feeling. Yeah. Well, you know, you're not among saints here.
That's true.
James, believe me. But I really am excited about this. I'd love to see the Stooges perform. I mean, you know, with Iggy, of course, fronting the band, but I think that would be a heck of an experience. And I would absolutely recommend this to anybody who's listening. You get a chance. But until then, the Careless Hearts, are you going to tour with them at all?
No, this is a one-off thing. This is, again, a thank you to those guys. I really like those guys, and it's kind of something that draws a lot of attention to their band, which is a very good band. And so, it's a one-time deal, and it's in a very small club, so there's only about 300 people who are going to see this. But we'll videotape it, too, so other people can see it.
Great, great deal. So then you have retired from Sony Electronics. Is that correct?
Yes, right. This is my retirement job.
Oh, cool.
What a way to retire.
Beats making, yard art, I guess, out of cardboard and things like that.
Exactly.
What else you got there, Mike?
I am sitting here just aghast. I mean, there's a thousand things, and we could keep going all night long, and I just don't know where to go from here.
One more question I just thought of, James. There's a famous photograph, and I think there's even a little bit of video somewhere, of Iggy actually standing on the crowd as they're supporting him with their hands.
Yeah.
Where did that happen?
Oh, you know, I'm not positive, but it was either in Indianapolis or it was St. Louis in a festival.
And
that was before my time in the band, but I've seen it millions of times.
Yeah.
And
there's peanut butter connected with that, I believe, too.
Mm, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think this is not this story is not news to anybody. He basically was on acid, and he went out and just started, you know, just walked out onto the crowd, the sea of people, and they supported him with their hands. And so, literally, he was walking on the people, and it's amazing to see that footage.
Yeah.
And then somebody out in the audience handed him up a jar of peanut butter, because it was a festival, so they had stuff to eat, And he just started spreading it on his chest, and what can you say?
Yeah.
I think no one had ever done anything like that before, and a lot of people have tried to do things like that since. I think, I recall one time when David Bowie tried to walk on the crowd, and they parted, and he fell on the floor, and that was the last time he ever tried. But, That became kind of a part of his shtick, you know, to do the stage diving and so forth.
What was it like to work with David Bowie back then over in London for the Raw Power thing? I think you kind of scared David a little with that stuff.
Oh, with our music?
Yeah.
He didn't have any idea what to do with our music. No, he, you know, David Bowie is, first of all, I have to give the disclaimer that he's not one of my favorite people, but anyway, he's very talented and very successful, and you can't, you know, you got to give the devil his due, but the bottom line was he was a kind of a pop guy. He wanted to make, you know, pop tunes, and we didn't want to have anything to do with that sort of thing. We wanted to make our own music, which we did, luckily, because everybody got too distracted with David to, you know, to pay any attention to us. So we kind of got to make our own record, and that was Raw Power. Yeah. We would have never come out like that had had our management and David's management been paying attention to us.
Were
so
you,
there's goodness that came out of that.
James, were you satisfied with that end result on Raw Power?
With Bowie's mix, I've often complained about it early on, but I think in hindsight, I have to give him credit that he, from what I understand, the levels, there was two parts to our success with that album. One was that we got to do what we wanted. The second part was we didn't know what we were doing, and so we made a lot of engineering errors in recording it, and so the levels were not so good, and a lot of technical problems with that album.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, David did what he could. He didn't understand the music, but he gave it a kind of arty mix, and you know, it doesn't. There's nothing else ever that has sounded like that album. So you got to give him credit for that.
Oh, you got that right,
James. Now to move forward, Iggy, New Values produced it, but also too you and Scott share guitar on that? I mean, exactly what transpired? I mean, I know you produced the album, but it's like, how much guitar work did you do on that?
Very little. By that point in time, I had pretty much given up the guitar. I did write one song on the album, and I played on that one. But other than that, Scott Thurston played all the guitars and did a heck of a job, I think. He... you know, he knew my style quite well, and so he imitated it to some degree, and it sounded good.
Did you love producing that album? I mean, was that album a labor of love as far as producing, you know, New Values?
Yeah, it was. It very much was. We all put a lot of time and effort into it, and I'm quite proud of it, really, because I think that the sound of that record holds up very nicely today. At the time, though, Arista Records was not happy with us because they were, you know, English punk. You know, they wanted that real raw sound, and that's not what I gave them. And so I was unpopular because of that, but I think the record holds up nice and plays beautifully on the radio.
Oh, I tell you what, as far, I don't care about radio play. I care about what I enjoy, and these songs are excellent. I you know, like 5 Foot One and Girls, and just there's a lot of tunes on this disc that I own, you know, and then it's re-released and they added bonus tracks and stuff, but still, it's just a really good listen. I mean, it's not Stooges music, but it's just, I love the tunes on it. I do.
That's good stuff. It really is.
Yeah, thank you. I'm like I say, I'm proud of that one.
I will, James, I will never forget the first time I heard Gimme Danger. It changed my life a little bit, almost as much as the first time I saw Led Zeppelin live, but for different reasons there. You know what I mean? Well, James, I really appreciate you calling in. And we wish you well. I hope everything goes well. I hope there's a Stooges reunion. And by God, they better get you guys in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or they ain't getting any more of my money.
And James...
Well, Chris, thank you very much. I appreciate you letting me come on, and I enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, James, one more thing, if you could possibly at all. If you could get one James Osterberg to call in, we would be taken aback.
We'll probably
I'll see what I can do.
We'll have to probably hospitalize Mike for a little while after that. But one more thing, James. Could you repeat after me? James Williamson loves WERS.
James Williamson loves WERS after tonight, anyway.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thank you so much.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye, James. Good luck to you. Well, Livers, that was James Williamson, ex-stooge, and maybe future stooge. Let's hope so. Hey, we got to do Gimme Danger right now. This is WERS. You're listening to Life as Art. Also, I'm Chris.
I'm the Gint. Christopher, is there someone you want to thank?
Well, sure there is. A certain Kathy Benson Burke helped us set up that interview with James Williamson. Thank you so much, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy.
That was a thrill of a lifetime, really was. I mean, that meant a lot to me, talking to that man. And once he gets that guitar back around his shoulder and he gets out there on stage, maybe...
He'll show us how
Well, no,
people retire.
After 27 years, maybe he'll remember why I feel the way I feel, feel
about
right now.
Their music, yeah.
And, yeah, because, like I said, Gimme Danger, first time I heard that, it was, I think, the Kenwood receiver was up to...
patent penned.
Yeah, it was on real loud, and there were... There was much marijuana smoke and some schnapps in the room, and that came on, and I had to just sit there and stare at that album cover while the whole thing played. And that's no shit. I'm not kidding. That's what it meant.
I'm just taken aback again.
That was a good interview. Thanks again, James Williamson. Hey, we're going to play Iggy the rest of the night. What do you think about that?
Sounds like a winner to me. And, you know, you... really close Iggy fans. Let's just remember, we are going to be playing some, you know, James Williamson tunes, but also, too, we're going to play some Iggy, too. Just Iggy.
Classic Iggy. You
but,
betcha.
There you go.
Hey, I want to remind everybody, Lifers, the WERS Fest is on September 5th. 10 bands for the price of... Hey, there is no price. How about that? It's a free show. It's a fundraiser. It's a charity event. Get on down to, what is it, RV Surplus?
Factory RV
Surplus. Doggone it. 1611 West Bristol Street, right here in Elkhart,
Indiana. Have to have a factory, have a warehouse.
That's right. Bring baby products and non-perishable food items for donation to Community Church Services. Hey, I'm messing around here, but this is the real deal. We're trying to help out. And you want to help. We know you do. That's why we're put on this earth, boys and girls.
To help our fellow man.
To be nice to each other. That's the whole thing. It'll get us through, right?
Yep. And on that note, we're going to move on because we're going to do another one off of New Values. This is called 5'1".
But, Mike, I have something else to say.
Well, what do you have to say, Chris?
We are expecting a phone call next Sunday on Life is Art, also from one Watermelon Slim, former truck driver. Now he is a blues slide guitarist.
And poet, kind of.
And, yeah, sort of a Tin Pan Alley poet. He writes some good stuff, and he's got some interesting stories. Not only that, in weeks...
Learned all the swear words I know from truck drivers.
There you go. In weeks to come, we... we'll hopefully have the former singer of Wall of Voodoo, Mr. Stan Ridgway, join us for a phone-in interview.
And I am a big Stan fan.
Yeah, Mike's all... I can see the the hairs are already sort of wiggling on top of his
We're
head.
Not just talking about Mexican radio. I was a big fan
oh,
of
God,
Dark Continent
so
and then just Stan stuff in general.
You
Stan
remember...
F-